Hello and welcome to Open Finance, the podcast series that believes the future of finance is open, brought to you by Finastra. In this series, we're exploring the impact of COVID-19 on the fintech ecosystem, bridging the wealth gap, and international fintech collaboration. I'm Helen Driver, founder of MoneyReady and a former fund manager. In this episode, we're looking at how technology can tackle financial exclusion. Whilst much of the world has long had access to bank accounts, billions of people are still unbanked, meaning they're missing out on the most secure way of storing their money and making transactions. I spoke to Erica Bauman, Senior Wholesale Banking Analyst at iTake Group, Elizabeth Friend, Managing Director of Small Scale Sustainable Infrastructure Development Fund, and Simon Paris, Finastra's CEO. Welcome, everyone, and thank you very much for joining us. Let's start by understanding what we mean when we talk about financial exclusion. How do you define financial exclusion and why is it a problem? Elizabeth, perhaps I can start by asking you.
Sure, absolutely. To me, financial inclusion really does mean when individuals, households, even small businesses have access to a range of financial services. And this is looking much more beyond simple banks accounts, savings and credits, and really looking at, well, what else are the really critical pieces and features and can involve things like access to payments, credit, investment, and insurance. And I think what we really should stop and think about is, you know, what do these products and services really mean for us in everyday lives? And a lot of it really does come down to building resilience so that we can better manage different shocks that we might have in our lives. We can plan ahead. And then also to make sure that we're able to really gain full access to different types of opportunities that exist. Everything from building assets and wealth to also even finding new opportunities for livelihood and incomes.
Thank you. Erica, perhaps I can bring you in on that point. Why is it a problem when individuals and businesses are financially excluded?
Sure. Thanks, Helen. So, you know, along the lines of what Elizabeth said, you know, access to credit, access to these services, access to payment, it's so important. I don't know that many people realize just how tightly financial inclusion is tied to poverty. Access to these services when there is an emergency, when there is a need to be able to promote or create the wealth from within a community to be able to have those small businesses, to have the goods and services that might not be available in particular regions. Many of these areas and many of these individuals that do not have access to these services are women. They're in rural areas. They are folks that perhaps don't have access to or might not be in the workforce. And it's really critical to keep in mind just how important this is and to even consider financial inclusion as part of the fundamental, you know, needs and basic needs for humans, just like clean water, access to community services, etc.
So almost a basic human right. I guess that's what you're saying. Simon, bringing you in, what is the scale of the problem of financial exclusion around the world? And are there any formalized global commitments to tackling financial exclusion?
Yeah, so I think in terms of scale, it's significant. I mean, the estimates are potentially 1/3 of the planet's population is not able to be banked, and 2/3 of the planet's population are considered illiterate. So those are mind-blowing statistics. And as Erica and Elizabeth were pointing out, it tends to be certain demographics, whether it's women or small businesses or people in emerging geographies, that are facing the brunt of this. So the ability to participate equally in the economy, I think, is something, you use the language of human right, but it is an expectation that people can engage freely, fairly, equally, as the definitions of being inclusive. Now, in terms of, is there anyone doing something about it in a systematic way? I think there are a number of initiatives by the United Nations, by the World Trade Organization, by different governments, by the OECD to try and foment more inclusion. But there's obviously a long way to go.
So what are the main barriers to financial inclusion? Is it as simple as everyone having access to a bank account? Elizabeth, perhaps I can ask you that question.
Sure, absolutely. I think having a bank account is absolutely an important starting point. But as I was noting earlier, having basic checking and savings is really just the starting point. I think we need to start moving the dialogue beyond just, does a bank account now exist? To now what is beginning to happen, which is saying, okay, well, if a bank account now exists, is it actually being used? The usage piece is really critical here because obviously if people have an account, but if it's not being used, then there's really not any progress being made. But then even beyond that, I think we have to start asking these really important questions about, okay, well, what else is it going to take and what do we need? And so that comes to that really important barriers questions that you posed. And I think there, we should look at this on two sides, both on the demand side as well as the supply side here. So when it comes to the demand side or the consumer side, I think, Simon, you mentioned there are really a couple important pieces. I mean, there's a lot of financial literacy. Also, there are challenges when it comes to even people being aware of what services exist. Oftentimes, people have spent so long working with informal financial service providers that it can be even very intimidating to try to go and navigate and figure out and even enter a bank, for example, for the very first time. So we need to be thinking very clearly about what the actual end users are interested in, what their true needs are, and really what their capabilities are at this point in time, and making sure that products and services are designed appropriately. And I think it also is important to consider what's happening on the other side, the supply side. A lot of financial service providers realize that there's a lot of potential, a lot of benefits that could happen from financial inclusion and from a purely business standpoint if they were able to better provide targeted financial services to those who are currently unserved or underserved. Historically, it's been very hard because many of these people are difficult to reach. They have been in either rural areas or in some ways off the grid. And so that can be a very expensive value proposition to them.
Great. I'd like to look now at some examples of schemes or social enterprises that encourage financial literacy and financial inclusion. We spoke to Grammel, a social enterprise that Elizabeth, your organisation, S3IDF, is involved in, based in Madhya Pradesh in India.
My name is Simin Kaleem. I am the co-founder of Grammel. So we design a multiple post-harvest solution for farmers, which ranges from providing them doorstep quality inspection, which allows them to know the quality of their produce. We send them personalized price information, which allows farmers to negotiate with the buyer for a fair price. We provide them integrated warehouse facility that allows them to store the produce and sell it at a favorable time during the season when the prices are better. And the fourth bit of our work is connecting farmers directly to the buyer, which allows them to earn a better price. There are very, very few organizations that specifically work with smallholder farmers in India and cater to their specific needs. And that is why we felt that Grammel needs to exist and solve and work with specific smallholder farmers at an individual level.
That was Samim Kaleem, co-founder of Grammel. Simon, do you have an example of a program that Finastra is working with?
Yes, one example I'd love to share is something we're doing in Kenya as part of a consortium. We refer to it as the Trust Machine. And the idea is that us as a technology player, providing also, working also with people in the area of blockchain and market analytics and balance sheet optimization, but more importantly, together with literacy, we're able to help the local communities as they think about their trade and their trade finance and their routes to market, optimize their outcomes. And we believe that we can help reduce the $19 billion trade financing gap in that country by about 1%. And we believe that can help lead to around 50,000 new jobs in that country.
You're listening to Open Finance, the podcast series that believes the future of finance is open, brought to you by Finastra. Please rate, review, and subscribe through your usual podcast app. Bringing it back specifically to financial inclusion, whose job is it to help the unbanked become banked? And what role does technology play in that process? Erica, perhaps you'd like to take that question.
Yeah, thanks, Helen. I mean, they're really, this is a fundamental question that we talked about a little bit earlier on the basic human need or even a basic human right to financial services and what that means to a community. Talking specifically about the unbanked and emerging markets here, it does come down to technology and who has the ability to bring that technology to market. The onus is on local governments. There's onus on financial institutions. I think there's also a moral obligation, particularly when we talk about the fintech and technology providers. You know, it's like holding the cure to some sort of disease and then not getting that cure out there except to just the privileged. That is an issue globally. And I think the world efforts from the G20 and such, there's an obligation to be part of the team for all of us in the industry to educate ourselves on what efforts are out in the market, to educate ourselves and what part our organizations play, the organizations that we work with and the partnerships that we form, to be able to bring this technology that makes those examples that both Simon and Elizabeth just gave us, you know, a reality. It certainly is a tough question. And again, I think there has to be a moral aspect to this story here, in addition to relationships that are financially beneficial for all the players involved.
What about the impact of COVID-19? As the pandemic has accelerated the shift to cashless payments in many countries, has this raised awareness in the fintech sector of the problems of financial exclusion and created a sense of urgency to improve inclusion for all?
Yeah, for sure. I think that the pandemic has created more awareness in the fintech sector by nature of the extent of the circumstances that we're all in together. You know, in our world today, it's not like one house or one region is in trouble or one house is on fire, but there are houses all over the globe on fire. There are regions all over that are feeling the immediacy and the urgency to be able to have access to goods and services in a time that there's so much turmoil. People are hurting, people are dying, and not just from disease and illness, but from a lack of access to basic services and fair services. I think this awakening and the fact that we do have this global connection between us right now has brought more awareness to the struggles that were already there. And now these struggles have become more widespread. And I do think in particular, the fintechs have a higher awareness that financial services, you know, should and can do something, so that financial services is not viewed as something that is elitist. And I use the term elitist here pretty loose. You know, when you think about who has access to a bank account and who does not, at, you know, as a very minimum baseline, the numbers that Simon gave us a little bit earlier are pretty, they're eye-opening. And the system can be fragile. And I think that there's not enough people in the public that really have realized until now just how fragile the system can be and how important access is. You know, a really fundamental example here in the U.S., the U.S. experienced a cash shortage. You could not go into a bank or into a grocery store and get change to be able to do your laundry, right? And this is in a market that has very wide financial inclusion, that suddenly something like the pandemic has created awareness that financial services, even in the most basic form, is so important.
Great. Simon, in your role at Finastra, you work with finance and fintech organizations right around the globe. Are there any specific initiatives that you see coming out of the pandemic which are specifically targeting improving financial inclusion for all?
Yeah, so building on what Erica was saying, you know, we use the language in our company that COVID has brought the future forward. So everything that was going to happen in the next 3 to 5 years has been massively accelerated into the next 12 to 18 months. So some examples, Helen, you mentioned the drive towards cashless payments. We see that happening at massive scale. You know, what was yesterday acceptable for a migrant employee to send back $100 to the Philippines and be charged $25 for doing so is now unacceptable. The marginal cost cost of a payment is moving towards zero. Secondly, in the area of trade finance, what was yesterday acceptable to say, you know what, I'm buying palm oil, but I don't know if it came from sustainable farming, is no longer acceptable. Much more transparency on open, sustainable, fair, inclusive trade, for example. And you can keep pushing through to all of the things that are being accelerated. You made the example of the laundromat, and you don't have a coin, you can't get a coin from a shop. You know, those kind of things are now becoming near field contact payments or wireless contact payments so that you can do more electronic transmission. A massive reduction in the amount of cash in society, which is a good thing. Cash is the primary conduit for physical violence, tax evasion, and has a cost of its own of typically around 6% of a good or service. So a lot of good things are being accelerated because of COVID. However, the World Economic Forum still reminds us that 150 million more people can be pushed into poverty because of COVID. So there's a lot of good being accelerated, but we also need to remember a lot of people are being pushed over into poverty.
If I may hop in here too, I think that what you, all of those points that Erica and Simon you're raising are really good ones. I think what, to, on this last point that you raised, Simon, about just the threat of having so many more people be pushed into poverty is a really, really scary one, and one that we really need to be focusing in on. Bringing it back to the topic of fintechs and the awareness of what COVID-19 has done and will likely continue to do to our everyday lives, especially on the financial side of them. I do think that a lot of the business models that have been appearing in recent years can actually be very, very well suited to a kind of COVID and post-COVID world, especially for those who have traditionally been a little bit poor, maybe underbanked, underserved in different ways. Just to give a couple of examples of the concepts, I see a lot now, a lot of transaction-based savings options cropping up. So for example, if someone does do a cashless payment, that it's possible to round up to the nearest round number, for example, and put a little and a, put a tiny bit of money into an account. And over time, that can make it a lot easier for people to save and getting back to what we were talking about earlier in terms of building up resilience, that can be extremely important for people to better handle shocks going forward. Also, in recent years, I've seen a lot of new developments with business models that are focusing on essentially microinsurance that can really help people better hedge and pay for a lot of different costs and unexpected realities that pop up. I also think, too, that with more and more people gaining access to smartphones, even in developing and emerging economies, that there are some exciting new business models that are cropping up that allow people to get very small loans with without having to have all the traditional types of documentation and credit scores and otherwise that would normally be needed. And this is great because people can pop up an app on their mobile phone. It will can do some data analysis and mobile scraping, and then people can get loans anywhere from about, you know, 5-10 US dollars up to 500 or the equivalent or so. And that can be really game changing because many of those loans do not come with any sort of conditions. They're short term in a lot of cases, but it can allow people to better navigate and hedge and deal with those immediate short term needs when they arise.
That's a lovely point at which to project forward. And Erica, I'd like to bring our conversation to a close by asking you, what further initiatives will we see during the next decade? And will financial exclusion become a thing of the past?
Yeah, I certainly think that that is a lofty goal. But as Simon alluded to earlier, the pace of innovation is quicker than it's ever been before. You know, the importance that Elizabeth just talked about of access to technology, the technology to create awareness, the technology for us to have conversations like this, the technology to open a simple bank account, all of that, I think, cannot be emphasized enough of just how important it is in the market. You know, I think that as far as initiatives that are happening that we're going to continue to see building in the coming years, you know, Finastra has had some impressive results. I think I read 760 women in India now have a bank account through the efforts of Finastra CSR team, right? We're going to see more initiatives like this that empower and help communities to begin to break some of the cycles of of poverty. I think there's a lot of challenges penetrating into these emerging regions where poverty is just so widespread, you know, and survival is a key part of everyday life, access to clean water, et cetera. But the trends that we're seeing around this awareness and around these smaller efforts that just make such a huge impact will continue to be built upon, will continue to make access earlier, will continue to bring us all together at a more global level to understand the impact that technology can have in all regions of the globe. You know, Simon also mentioned the volatility around cash and the violence, et cetera, that exists around that. And so, you know, every time that we chip away at this through these efforts, through the efforts of the G20, through the efforts of the fintechs, through the, you know, the micro loans, et cetera, we're solving one more piece of the puzzle. And I think that it's going to be exciting to watch what happens in this acceleration of innovation and this desire to be able to do more to combat the issues of financial inclusion around the globe.
Great. Simon, do you share that confidence that financial exclusion could become a thing of the past?
I think Erica said it very well, very pragmatic, you know. So yes, optimism that we can resolve it, but pragmatic that this is a lofty goal and it's not going to be easy to achieve. I think my synthesis would be that technology is pivotal. It's the great enabler. However, it depends on 3 to 4 things. It depends on accessibility. And as Elizabeth said, accessibility will come down to the smartphone in your hand. We need to strive to put a smartphone into the hand of every human. It's the great leveler for accessibility. The second is affordability. And the way to drive affordability is, to Elizabeth's point, data will drive transparency. And that will stop the loan sharks, that will stop abusive rates, that will stop bad programs. So affordability is the great second objective. The third is literacy. It's not just about a bank account, as Elizabeth was saying. It's about more sophisticated micro capabilities, micro insurance, micro credits, trade finance, understanding the role of payments. And literacy is something that is the burden of everyone to provide. And then lastly, the role of regulation. We need to protect the unprotected, right? As they come up the literacy curve, we need to make sure they're protected on that journey.
Great. You've drawn out some really important points there. And it's a nice place to bring our conversation to an end. So all that's left for me to do is to thank our guests for joining us. Thank you very much and goodbye.
Thank you very much,
thank
everyone.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was Erica Bauman, Senior Wholesale Banking Analyst at Aite Group, Elizabeth Friend, Managing Director of Small Scale Sustainable Infrastructure Development Fund, and Simon Paris, Finastra's CEO. If you've enjoyed listening to this episode, have a listen to the other episodes in this series. And do please rate, review, and subscribe through your usual podcast app. I'm Helen Driver. Thanks for listening to Open Finance, the podcast series that believes the future of finance is open. Brought to you by Finastra.